Today we will start verses in chapter 2 in Galatians. So I'll read the passage first. Galatians chapter 2 verse 1. Then 14 years after, I went up again to Jerusalem with Barnabas and took Titus with me also. And I went up by revelation and communicated unto them that gospel which I preach among the Gentiles, but privately to them which were of reputation, lest by any means I should run or had run in vain. But neither Titus, who was with me, being a Greek, was compelled to be circumcised. And that because of false brethren unawares brought in, who came in privately or privily to spy out our liberty which we have in Christ Jesus, that they might bring us unto bondage, to whom we gave place by subjection, no, not for an hour, that the truth of the gospel might continue with you. But of these who seemed to be somewhat, whatsoever they were, it makes no difference to me. God accepts no man's person. For they who seemed to be somewhat in conference added nothing to me. But contrariwise, when they saw that the gospel of the uncircumcised was committed unto me, as the gospel of the circumcised was unto Paul. For he that wrought effectually in Peter to the apostleship of the circumcision, the same was mighty in me toward the Gentiles. And when James, Cephas, and John, who seemed to be pillars, perceived the grace that was given unto me, they gave to me and Barnabas the right hand of fellowship, that we should go unto the heathen, and they unto the circumcised. Only they would that we should remember the poor, the same which I also was forward to do. So we have a long passage today, but it's been put together like this because it covers the same topic and it's dealing with the same subject. So in this passage we see that Paul, he's continuing to defend his apostleship and the message that he was preaching among the Gentiles. As we know that in Galatians, the main subject is the commandments that the church should be obeying. If they should be following the laws of Moses and the ceremonial laws that were given to the nation of Israel. And we already said that how it is very important to understand this book of Galatians, you know, because especially among the evangelical circles, it's very important because one of the reason of all the false teaching is the false understanding of this book. It's so true. And if you read, you know, many commentaries, they call this book as the Magna Carta of evangelical message. Okay, the Magna Carta was, I had to look up what that word means. So it was in the time of England and British. They were under the subjection of the king. The king was the final authority. So the people rebelled against, or started rebelling and questioning the king. So they found this Magna Carta, this set of rules and laws that they send it to the king, then the king would agree to those things. So basically it gave freedom to the people and it enlightened the people that they also have choice and they also have freedom as individuals. Okay, so that's what the word means. So the purpose I brought that up was, this book is called the Magna Carta of evangelical gospel. Okay. Because it says that we should not be following the law, and we should not be following, we don't have to do anything to have salvation, to have an entrance into the kingdom. But we already covered many of those things, how that it doesn't mean that we don't have to follow laws of God. But the book of Galatians is covering, and it is emphasizing that the church should not follow the laws of Moses and the laws of the old covenant. Those things have been put aside. Okay, and also it's very important because it joins the church as one. Otherwise, there would be two gospels, right? There would be two different types of church of Christ: one for the Jews and one for the Gentiles. So there would be confusion. So one of the main purpose of this book, we know in chapter 1, is that that Paul is saying that there is only one gospel, right? For the Jew and the Gentile. There are no two separate messages. So in this passage, we see that Paul is again, Paul is defending how that he is the true apostle of Jesus Christ, and that he did not receive his revelation and his teaching from the church and from the elders in Jerusalem. Okay, so in this passage, he's emphasizing that after his conversion, he went to Jerusalem after 3 years, and he met Peter only for 15 days, and then he left, and then he was doing his ministry in the region of Gentiles. And then in this chapter, he's saying that after 14 years, I went again to Jerusalem. No, so that he's emphasizing the fact that he did not receive his teaching, his authority, and he was not discipled by the apostles in Jerusalem. But he was discipled and taught by the Lord Jesus Christ himself. Okay, that's the emphasis that he's trying to make. That 14 years is a very long time. No? And he did not need any input or any teaching from the apostles. Because why? Because Jesus Christ himself was teaching him. Right? He did not need any other teacher. Okay? And he did not see the need to go and meet them. So that's the main purpose, that he did not. And we know that if he was a disciple and he was taught by Peter, then he would have to go there regularly and, you know, make sure that he is being ministered to and being encouraged by Peter. So that's the key in this verse, that he's saying after 14 years, that's a very, very long time, he went up again to Jerusalem with Barnabas and took Titus with me. So we know that he again went there for a purpose. And that purpose was the same very purpose, that what are the commandments? What are the laws? What is the lifestyle that the church in among the Gentiles, what should they be following? Okay, that's the main purpose he went to. So this verse, you know, there is some controversy and some debate in this verse, mainly because here Paul says that this was his second visit to Jerusalem. Okay, but when we read in the history in the book of Acts, this there seem to be 3 visits of Paul to Jerusalem. So I've put a small table here so that it would make it easy for us to compare. The visit of Paul to Jerusalem. In the book of Acts, there are 3 mentions, as I said, that Paul visited Jerusalem 3 times. First went immediately after his conversion. Then second is in Acts chapter 11, verse 27 and 30. That's the second time in the book of Acts he went to Jerusalem. And this time it says that he had gone there to provide some material help to the church in Jerusalem. And Barnabas was with him. And also then the next time he went to Jerusalem is in Acts 15. Okay, in Acts 15 he went, and this time it was to discuss and debate the message of the gospel that he is preaching among the Gentiles. And that's the main reason he went in Acts 15. So the debate and the discussion in Christian circle is like what visit he's referring to in the book of Galatians chapter 2, which visit he's referring to, whether it's Acts 11 where he went to give the money and help to the church, or whether it's Acts 15 where he went to discuss and debate. Okay, I think it makes sense if we compare it with Acts 15. There are many similarities with Acts 15, but we cannot be 100% sure. Okay. Because it doesn't say that clearly, and there are some differences in the narration of the history in Acts 15 and Galatians chapter 2. So, personally, I feel that it makes sense if we relate the visit of Galatians chapter 2 with the visit of Acts 15, because of the purpose, it meets the exact purpose. He went there to discuss the message that he was preaching among the Gentiles, and the outcome of that visit and the outcome of Galatians 2 is exactly the same. That is, the elders were agreed with Paul that he is apostle of Christ and that he is teaching the message to the Gentiles according to what Christ wants us to preach. So that's why I think Acts 15 makes sense, but we cannot be 100% sure. And I think it doesn't make it's not a big deal also, okay? So there are different ways of explaining why he said it was the second visit. Because maybe the visit in Acts 11 was not for discussing doctrine, or it was not for... maybe the apostles were not there when he visited, I don't know. It could be explained in different ways, okay? So that's the main reason people believe why Acts 15 cannot be this visit, because Acts 15 was the third visit. And here he's saying that this is my second visit to Jerusalem. But it does not matter. This could be some other visit that he did not, that is not covered in Acts chapter, in the book of Acts. The main point and the key point is the result was the same, okay, for the of their discussion. So moving on, in verse 2, he says that why did he go there? Because Jesus Christ himself, in verse 2, Jesus Christ himself told him to go and meet the leaders in Jerusalem. Okay? And then he says that he communicated the Gospels privately to the apostles and he explained to them the message that he's preaching among the Gentiles. And it says, lest by any means I should run or had run in vain. So he's saying that the reason I privately and I only communicated and met with the elders was so that my ministry would not be in vain or had run in vain. Now of course this doesn't mean that Paul was not sure about his message, right? Doesn't mean that Paul was not sure about what he's preaching is correct and he's saying that my ministry would be in vain. It would mean because if the elders did not agree, if there was a disagreement and for some reason maybe the church in Jerusalem would side with the false brethren, you know, this would affect Paul's ministry in a big way. This could divide the church. And Paul was concerned about that. Paul was concerned about the disciples and the church that he planted in the region of the heathen or the Gentiles. If his labor in preaching the truth, if that would be affected. Because what if the elders and the church in Jerusalem did not accept the right message? Then there would be a division and many of the true disciples would fall away from the faith. Right, so that's why I think he's saying that my labor could be in vain. And this phrase is repeated a couple of other times in the epistles. Look in Philippians chapter 2 verse 5:15, it says that you may be blameless and harmless, these sons of God, without rebuke, in the midst of a crooked and perverse nation, among whom you shine as lights in the world, holding forth the word of life, that I may rejoice in the day of Christ, that I have not run in vain, neither labored in vain. So, the word of life is the message of the gospel, the message of the coming kingdom. You know, and this message changes people, right? That's the power of this message. This message changes people for good. It makes them lights of the world. So, if this message is corrupted, if this message... for some reason is corrupted. In this case, if the church in Jerusalem rejects it or the elders do not agree with it, then people cannot shine forth as light because they will not have the right message. And if that doesn't happen, then on the day of Christ, the disciples will not be rewarded. They will not be approved before the Lord Jesus Christ. Now, this is the main goal and purpose of Paul. The main goal and purpose of Paul in his church ministry is not just to have a big crowd, right? And not just to be successful. His goal and his whole purpose was that people would become disciples, people would change and become lights of this world. Not like the crooked and perverse nation, and that they would be approved in that day of Christ. You know, that was the main goal and purpose that Paul was laboring for. And he did not care about anything else. And that's what he says later on, that he does not, it doesn't matter about the position and the leadership that the church in Jerusalem had at that time. So that is his worry, that all the labor that he put in teaching the people among the Gentiles would go in vain if that message was corrupted. And then we also see in 1 Thessalonians chapter 3 verse 5, "For this cause, when I could no longer forbear, I sent to know your faith, lest by some means the tempter, having tempted you, and our labor be in vain." That is again the fear that Paul had in the Thessalonian church were going through persecution and trials and testing. And he's saying that because of those things, because of trials and testing, I fear that you would quit the faith, quit living by faith, and all my labor would go in vain. So we see that Paul's concern all through the scriptures is that his disciples, the people that he labored for, that they would live by faith and that they would be approved in the coming kingdom. So if the message is corrupted, then that will be affected for sure. You know, that is the reason the message is so important. And that's the reason we see there's so much of debate and, you know, discussion and visits with Paul, right? Because in the scriptures, you know, the teaching and doctrine is very important. More and more the church doesn't want to talk about these things, right? Now it's becoming like that. I think probably the old churches, they would discuss doctrine and there would be a lot of discussion and debates and things like that going on. But now we see more and more churches just don't talk about it, which is very odd. Because for us, we have not been used to that, like the church would discuss and debate doctrine. But the church that we came from got corrupted towards the end. Definitely we saw that they didn't want to discuss doctrine. And if anyone would question their teaching, they would get very defensive and offended. But it is not so in the scriptures. The discussion of doctrine and setting off of what we need to do and what we don't need to do was very important, and they discussed it out and they came to a conclusion. Okay, so we see here that Paul, also in this verse, he mentions that he took Titus with him. Titus was the important thing about here in this passage. Titus is a Gentile. He has not come from a Jewish root like Timothy. And we know that Timothy was circumcised by Paul after he became a disciple and he started following Christ. Timothy was circumcised because he was half Jew. But Titus was a Gentile. He was a convert through Paul's ministry. And he was a very, very devout, very committed Gentile. A Gentile believer and a Christian. You know? And if it is anybody, then Titus should be circumcised. Because you cannot, I mean, he's one of the examples of a very devout Christian. Okay, he was very committed, and we know the book of Titus is written to Titus, and he was a church history says that he was a bishop or a leader among many churches, and he planted many churches in Crete. So the reason Paul is mentioning Titus is because of that reason. He is a devout Christian, and if it is anyone, then he should be forced or compelled to circumcise. And also the key word here is compelled. Like, no one forced him to be circumcised. If it was anyone, he should be forced to circumcise. Then in verse 3, we already covered, "Neither Titus, who was with me, being a Greek, was compelled to be circumcised." Then verse 4, he gives the reason why he went and discussed this, and he's trying to sort this out in Jerusalem. It's because of false brethren. And because of false brethren unawares brought in, who came in privily to spy out our liberty which we have in Christ Jesus, that they might bring us into bondage. So verse 4 is the purpose that he is doing this. It's because suddenly out of the churches that he had, out of among the churches, there were believers rising up and saying that we should also follow the commandments of Moses. Okay, and it happened subtly. Like, Paul was unaware of it. Because if he was aware of it, he might have done something way before. So it was kind of a very difficult and very serious situation that he had to go and talk to the church in Jerusalem and straighten it out as soon as possible. So we see here that false brethren had come in the church. Okay, false brethren is referring to people that were disciples, maybe for some while, and then they became apostates, or they started, becoming lukewarm, and then of course, outright becoming apostates. So we should understand that the false brethren here is not the people outside the church. They were not outside the church at that time. Okay, they were from within them. They were rising up false teachers who were teaching things which are not the commandments of Christ. Or maybe they were aware of it, but they kept quiet for a while. You know, they became part of the church, they got baptized, and they were, committed for some time. And then slowly they started saying that we should also be following the laws and the commandments of Moses. So they came in subtly, and it's like the idea is like a snake coming in quietly to catch a prey. We see also many other places where false teachers, false brethren, false prophets are mentioned. Okay, and in 2 Peter chapter 2 verse 1 it says, "But there were false prophets also among the people, even as there shall be false teachers among you, who privately shall bring in damnable heresies, even denying the Lord that brought them, and bringing upon themselves swift destruction." Verse 2 is, I think, the main problem, that they corrupt the church. You know, they take other people with them. They defile and they teach things which are wrong to maybe new believers or new Christians who are not so much grounded in the scriptures. "And many shall follow their pernicious ways, by reason of whom the way of truth shall be evil spoken of. And through covetousness shall they with feigned words..." Feigned words is like false words, or words that you try to trick people. "Make merchandise of you, whose judgment now of a long time lingers not, and their damnation slumbers not." So we see the false teachers were from among the people. And the example here is the nation of Israel. From among the people, there were false teachers coming up, and they were teaching things that were not of faith, and that were not that would not please God. And even, even persecutions and trials and testing was from among the people. We don't see so much, at least in the scriptures, we don't see so much the Romans troubling Paul, and the Gentiles and the heathens troubling so much Paul. But we see the Jews who have the scriptures, who have the oracles of God. They are the ones who are the troublemakers. And we should not always be looking outside the church for outside the people who claim that they are Hindus or Muslims, but people who have the scriptures, who claim to be Christians, it's mostly them who are persecuting the church in a very, very serious way. And we also have the example of Paul himself, right? He was a Jew and an Israelite who was persecuting the church. So we see that the main purpose of Paul doing this is because of false brethren. And he was opposing, Paul was doing all that he could to defend and hold on to the truth, and to keep the truth pure, so that it's not corrupted. Okay? And what is the truth of the gospel? I think in the same chapter, in verse 16, he tells us the truth of the gospel. Okay, we can read that in Galatians chapter 2 verse 16. "Knowing that a man is not justified by the works of the law, but by the faith of Jesus Christ. Even we have believed in Jesus Christ, that we might be justified by the faith of Christ, and not by the works of the law. For by the works of the law shall no flesh be justified." So this is the truth of the scriptures, that salvation and entrance into the coming kingdom is not through keeping the laws of Moses, and not through keeping the old covenant, but it's through the keeping the commandments of Christ, and it's through living by faith, the righteousness that comes by faith. Now we know that the law here is not talking about the moral laws. Okay, the moral laws, even Christ repeated again in the Gospels. The moral laws were given before the laws of the ceremonial laws of Moses. So it doesn't mean that we should not be keeping the moral laws. Okay, that is also by faith. That is of faith. But we should not be keeping the ceremonial laws like circumcision and keeping the Sabbath and keeping new moon and all these days that were there in the old covenant. Then verse 6. But of these who seem to be somewhat, whosoever they were, it makes no matter to me. God accepts no man's person. For they who seem to be somewhat, in conference added nothing to me. So in verse 6 onwards, he is giving the conclusion of the discussion and the confrontation he had with the church in the elders in Jerusalem. That they agreed to the message that Paul was preaching. They agreed that we are not justified by the laws of Moses and the laws of the old covenant, but we are justified by faith in Christ, by keeping the commandments of Christ. So Paul had full approval from the church in Jerusalem. Okay, that the Gentiles should not be keeping the laws of Moses. And we see that in Acts chapter, maybe that verse is in your in Acts chapter 21 verse 20, it tells us that first of all there were many Jews who were keeping the ceremonial laws. Okay, and they were allowed to do that because it's not necessarily sin, right? And there are things that we can do which are not morally wrong, but they are not of faith also. They are not something which will be pleasing God. I think that's how the Jews were practicing. The early church continued to practice things because they were devout Jews, continued to practice things which were not the commandments of Christ. Like they had their ceremonies in the temple, like the Nazirite vow. But those things were not put on the Gentiles because those things are not required under the new covenant. I'll read in Acts chapter 21 verse 20. And when they heard it, they glorified the Lord and said unto him, Thou seest, brother, how many thousands of Jews there are which believe, and they are all zealous for the law. And they are informed of thee that thou teachest all Jews which are among the Gentiles to forsake Moses, saying that they ought not to circumcise their children, neither to walk after the customs. So this was the accusation against Paul, that he's teaching the Jews that they should not be doing this, and that this is sin, right? And if you do these things, you will not enter the kingdom. But Paul was not teaching those things to the Jews. He allowed the Jews to live like a Jew, right? But he did not put all those things on the Gentiles. The Gentiles were not told to be circumcised. The Gentiles were not told to keep all the ceremonial laws. And look in the same passage in verse 25. As touching the Gentiles which believe, we have written and concluded that they observe no such things. So the entire Jerusalem church and also the elders, they concluded that they should not be observed. The Gentiles don't need to observe these things. But they only gave the commandment that they should keep themselves from things offered to idols and from blood and from strangled and from fornication. So these were the only things that they told them not to do. And of course, most of these are morally wrong, right? They are sin. One second. So let's read this passage again. But of these who seem to be somewhat, whosoever they were, it makes no difference to me. God accepts no man's person. For they who seem to be somewhat in conference added nothing to me. So he's saying it doesn't matter actually, really, if they did not agree to me, because it doesn't man's position and authority doesn't make his message, just because he has position and authority does not make his message true. Why is he saying that? Because he had received this message from Jesus Christ, right? From God. So it did not matter what Peter and James and John would say, right? He's probably saying this because the false teachers are appealing to saying that, you know, this is what James and John and Peter teach. So they are appealing to personalities and authority. So just because James, John and Peter and all these and the church in Jerusalem, which is the main church, just because they are teaching these things, then we should also or they are following these things, then we should also follow these things. So Paul is saying that personality, we should not go by the personality. And it is also true in every for us, we can apply these things, that many times churches and people go by man's personality. You know, and most of these mega churches are run by personalities. They have very good personality people, right, who run these big organizations. You know, and they are very well, good to talk, and they are very good to convince people. These things. So it's personality run. There are many personality run organizations and churches. Okay, and it is not of God in most cases. Right? In most cases, they are not teaching the truth. And we should check the person with the scriptures. That's the key. If we go just by the personality of the way the, you know, the way the emotionally or by his style he's trying to convince us, if we just go by that, then we will make mistake and we will be deceived. Okay, so very important to understand that we should check a man by comparing it with the scriptures. Okay. But he's saying that they did not add anything to my message, and that shows that we are one. You know, the church in Jerusalem, the churches that were planted among the Gentiles, the apostles in Jerusalem and Paul, they are one because they have received their message from the same authority, that is Jesus Christ. And he's saying that they did not oppose to me, but they saw that I am an apostle, that I have been taught by Jesus Christ. That was the outcome of the message. When he met the apostles and he explained to them how he has planted so many churches, how the Gentiles have received the message, when he narrated to them all these things, the apostles were convinced that he is an apostle of Christ, just like us. Okay. But contrariwise, when they saw that the gospel of the circumcision was committed unto me, as the gospel of the circumcision unto Peter. So verse 7, and in a casual reading, I think it conveys that there are two gospels. You know, many people use this verse to teach that there are two gospels. And this is one of the main verses, that there is one gospel that was taught by Peter, that was for the Jews. So anything related to commandments and doing things, you know, morality and all those things, they will say that that's the gospel for the Jews. That later on changed. We have to read Paul's epistles, okay? And anything that is related to free grace, and we just have to believe and not do anything and we will go to heaven, those things, they say that that's the gospel of Paul. And that's what we should follow, right? But that's not the thing, because we see that before even going to this verse, Paul has already said that there is only one gospel. You know, there is very clear verses on that, that there is only one message, both to the Jew and the Gentile. There is only one faith. There is only one body. So there are so many clear verses. So of course it's saying that Peter was an apostle, an apostle to the Jews. He gave the gospel message and he ministered primarily to the Jewish people. And Paul was an apostle to the Gentiles. And his teaching he had more revelation on the teachings that were taught to the Gentiles than Peter did. So that is the that is the difference, that Peter's main ministry was to the Jews and his teaching was concentrated more on the Jews because the Jews had the scriptures. So it was different for them. The Jews had the Mosaic laws. So and but the heathen, they were mostly idol worshippers. That's why we see that Paul, when he went to Athens, he related to the God of heaven who created, who's a creator, right? And we see Peter, he when he's preaching in Acts 2, he is not starting with creation, because he is already talking to people who have the scriptures. So he starts with the scriptures. He starts quoting from Joel, right? So that's the difference, that they are ministering to two different groups of people. They were apostles to two different groups of people. And it is very clear in subsequent verses. As we said, that we just don't read one verse, right? We have to read the other verses. So when we read the other verses, it's very clear what he's trying to say. See in verse 8, "For he that works effectually in Peter to the apostleship of the circumcision, the same was mighty in me towards the Gentile." So he explains what he means in verse 8. So the apostles, when they heard and when they saw the work of Paul, they were convinced that he is an apostle of Christ, that Jesus Christ has been teaching him, that Jesus Christ has chosen him. In Acts chapter 9 verse 15 it says, "But the Lord said unto him, Go thy way, for he is a chosen vessel unto me to bear my name before the Gentiles." Right? Then in Romans chapter 11 verse 13, "For I speak unto you Gentiles, inasmuch as I am the apostle of the Gentiles, I magnify my office." Then in 1 Timothy 2 verse 7, "Whereunto I am ordained a preacher and an apostle, a teacher of the Gentiles in faith and truth." In 2 Timothy 1:11, "Whereunto I am appointed a preacher and an apostle and a teacher of the Gentiles." So Paul's main ministry and main teaching was for the Gentiles. And we know that, of course, he did minister to the Jews. He did go first to the Jews. But the Lord was always directing him to the Gentiles. Right? His main ministry was for the Gentiles. So that's what the apostles acknowledged. And they had nothing to point out in his message and in his ministry to point out that he is not of God, that he is not of Christ. And he goes on to say that there's only one thing that they suggested me in verse 10, is that he should remember the poor. Right? I think he's trying to say this to tell them that there was nothing, absolutely nothing, that he was doing wrong when he met the apostle and the church. That there was no additional things that the apostles in Jerusalem could add to his message. Okay, except that they just said that remember the poor, which he was already doing. Okay. Why is that? Because in closing, I'll read a few verses. Because he was showing the signs of the apostle. They saw grace in his life, right? And we know that in First Corinthians 15, that grace was seen by the labor, by the work that Paul had put in the churches. Then they saw grace because the churches that he planted were having the same gifts. They were having the same fervent disciples that they had in Jerusalem. And also the signs and wonders that the apostles were doing in the church in Jerusalem, those same signs and wonders Paul and the apostles were doing in the churches in Gentile. In 1 Corinthians 9 verse 1, "Am I not an apostle? Am I not free? Have I not seen Jesus Christ our Lord? Are not ye my work in the Lord? If I be not an apostle unto others, yet doubtlessly I am to you. For the seal of mine apostleship are ye in the Lord." So all these churches that Paul planted, and here in this case of Corinthians, he's saying, "You are the seal of my apostleship." Okay. 1 Corinthians 12 verse 12, "Truly the signs of an apostle was wrought among you in all patience, in signs and wonder and mighty deeds. For what is it wherein you were inferior to other churches?" So there is in no way the churches of the Gentiles were inferior or less in terms of gifts and understanding and all the blessings that comes in the church. They were in no way inferior. So all these things, when the church in Jerusalem, when the apostles saw that, they acknowledged that yes, this is the true message, and they did not oppose Paul. But they blessed him. They said, continue. They encouraged Paul to continue doing what he was doing. Okay? So, we'll stop here.